you have a nice 4th of July in the UK?
Yeah. We just did nothing. No. Yeah. I'll be honest, I wouldn't even know if Henna told me.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, is it you're the news day is slower at least, so.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell because it's completely dead out there.
Yeah, well, I thank you for giving us the opportunity to have a Wednesday off, so. Historically, that's what happened. Coming back from the break, there is a couple of really cool stories to check out. So let's jump in. The first thing is a new prediction from supply chain analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, no longer of KGS Securities, now of
TF, I think, International Securities.
TF, International Securities. So still a securities, but not the KGI. So
now he's international.
Yeah, indeed. The initial report was that he was going to retire from KGI and focus on other companies in Apple. But so far, I'm quite pleased that he's continued his interest in Apple and his sources are still there, because this is at least the third report from Ming-Chi Kuo at TF, and this one was pretty cool. So tell me about the new report from Kuo.
Yeah, so we've seen some rumblings from different places of some questionable case leaks of different colors, and a couple of analysts saying they expect the new lineup to come in some new colors, but no one's really been specific on what that would mean. Kuo says that there will be a handful of new colors. In fact, they're going to apparently bring the gold out. So we saw this leaked actually by the FCC a few months back. We talked about that, where a gold iPhone 10 prototype was photographed in FCC documents that came out. Obviously, something weird happened there where Apple forgot to redact them again, and there were a lot of rumors at the time, probably fueled by Kuo actually, that Apple wanted to release a gold one, but they're having production problems, so then it never came out. But it seems like they're going to bring it out this fall, at least for the 6.5-inch model. It doesn't mention the 5.8-inch successor to the iPhone X. I think it'd be strange if they didn't put the gold on both the mid and the high end. But they've done it before, right? Where they're only on one SKU. So gold is coming in addition to the black and white that we already have. And then for the quote unquote cheap iPhone, the 6.1-inch LCD model, which is positioned to replace the iPhone 8 and the 8 Plus in the lineup because it's taken that price point out while retaining a lot of the iPhone 10 design, Face ID, very slim bezels with all the way around. Compromises some other stuff, obviously it's not OLED, so the quality of the screen isn't quite as good, and there's no dual rear camera and stuff like that. But the idea is you're getting most of an iPhone 10, but for, $200 less. And it's this one where Kuo says it will apparently debut in grey, white, blue, red, and orange. So speaking of 4th of July, you can get your red, white, and blue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a day late on the story, but yeah. I'm
expecting that the grey and the white colours are referring to space grey and silver.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
Or at least a slight tweak on those colours. Because obviously the OLED iPhones are stainless steel and glass, and this phone is expected to be glass on the back and the front, but with an aluminium band, sort of like the iPhone 8 is.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be that they call them grey and white, even if they're really the same colour. Do you know what I mean? They might call them slightly differently, just because they're slightly different materials and they're slight differences in the finish. But I'm assuming that grey and white is the same kind of black and silver that we already
have. Apple will call anything space gray, and then KGI, or excuse me, Ming-Chi Kuo, no longer KGI, will never get the marketing name right. I think he called jet black piano black, and you wouldn't look at the space gray HomePod and call it not the black HomePod. It's the marketing color names are often not recognizable even by visuals. So yeah, I agree with you that it's probably a variation of whatever color is black, that's gray, space gray, and then that white. Because on the silver model, it's literally white glass and then silver band. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So we're primarily looking at the blue, red, and orange editions. Right. And red obviously has precedence in the special edition iPhones because, you know, twice now they've had product red models of the iPhone that come out not at launch but a few months later. The quote report doesn't specify a timeline for all these colors. It just says the five possible colors are. So maybe, again, the red's not going to come till later, but it seems like it's headed for launch because the rest of the report was talking about, like, the third and fourth quarter sales. So I think if they weren't coming day in date, he would have mentioned it. Kind of like last year when he said the gold one would launch later.
Yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
It never transpired.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But, so blue, red, and orange. The red probably is going to look... You can get an idea of what it looks like from the iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus product red, which is, you know, black bezel, red chassis, and it looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I love the red color, but so far I've never been able to buy one because it never comes out in time because you always want to buy it on day one and they never have the red one. This year it seems like they have red on day one, but now we've got a new asterisk in that it's not on the model you're going to want to buy anyway. So
on the higher end models, right?
Yeah, it's not on the 5.8 inch or the 6.5 inch. It will be on the entry level 6 and 6.1 inch OCD phone, which will be, I'm pretty sure, a massive hit because it's, you know, most of my iPhone 10, but for a normal price. So I'm sure it's going to rock off the shelves. But, you know, for us, we're looking at the OLED models, of course.
Yeah.
And then blue and orange. I've wanted a blue iPhone for a long time.
Yeah.
Our friend and colleague Michael Stieber did a quick little mock-up. He basically just took the iPhone 10 and tinted the back into these, you know, rumored colors to just get a general gist of what it'll look like. Just to clarify, the header image is the iPhone 10 tinting those four colors, but the 6.1 inch phone is not expected to have a rear dual camera. So just keep that in mind. Obviously, there's the gold in that picture as well, but you can get a kind of idea of what the blue would look like. He used the iPod colors as like the reference to tint with. I think a blue iPhone would be really cool. Again, though, if it's not going to be in the high-end models, I'm not, you know, it's not really my market.
Yeah, same here. So a few things I want to respond with. First thing is, two of my first Apple products were iPod Nanos, and they were both the Nanos after the short, fat one that looked like a classic, but it was really a Nano. I think it was like the fourth generation or so. But one, I forget which order it was. I think it was the first one was orange, and that one I got for my 16th birthday. Was my first Apple product ever, and I loved that. And then the next one maybe added a camera for video, and that one was blue. So orange and blue. You've got my attention for these iPhones. But same predicament as you. This isn't the iPhone that appeals to me. But I mean, what a great marketing trick to use colors to, you know, on a brand new model, basically, that's got some compromises, but it's from almost any iPhone, an upgrade. And then, well, I'll have in the higher end models just sell themselves on quality, I guess. The thing is, Ming-Chi Kuo's history of reporting colors, like you mentioned, he had reported that the iPhone 10 would have a gold color option, but it might not be ready at launch. And that was before the iPhone 10 debuted, so that was something he got right. It wasn't just that the iPhone 10 came out, it was only available in space gray and silver, and that he said there was a gold, it might come out. It was, you know, before Apple had that unveil in September, he had the report that said gold won't be ready at launch, might come later, you know, and the FCC leak kind of confirmed that, yeah, gold was in on the radar, but it, you know, wasn't going to be there in time. The other thing is that I want to think about is, so, you know, the three new iPhones this year, and then we have iPhone 10s, so you would need to have the 5.8 inch iPhone or the 6.5 inch iPhone without color to be an upgrade. The 6.1 inch LCD model, the compromises, as you mentioned, you know, LCD screen over OLED. So you're not going to have the deep blacks that you have on an OLED display. I think for people that care a lot, like, that's noticeable. If you've never had an iPhone 10, you won't notice until you see it. So it's not a practical difference.
And the LCD display has benefits over the OLED in terms of, you know, no chance for burning, and you don't get like the weird blue shifting stuff. So it's not all like a win just on OLED.
Yeah. And then it's going to have this, you know, according to the rumors, this iPhone 10 style, so that it's not, doesn't have a home button. It's got a Face ID. It doesn't have the big bezel, the front end. It has the, you know, the notch cut out and then like edge to edge screen. Even though it's not OLED, no dual camera on the backside, which if you have an iPhone 8 or prior, like if you've never had a plus size iPhone or an iPhone 10, then you've never had a dual camera. So you don't miss out on that. On that, which mostly affords you 2x optical zoom and the ability to take portrait photos on the backside. But if you get this iPhone 10 style, you know, phone with Face ID, then you probably get portrait selfies. So that's something that's only on the iPhone 10 right now. But you kind of get that effect on their front camera. So that's still a benefit.
Not the greatest portrait mode. the front-facing one.
People say it's getting better with 12. I don't use it enough to I still had like mixed results with any portrait at all because it's all rendered, you know.
Yeah, the release notes specifically specify a new portrait lighting improvements.
Yeah,
like where it masks, like it better masks the human against the background. So it's not just like placebo or people are like, oh, the thing is getting better. Like
on paper, they've done work to make it better.
And then
no 3D touch is the big omission that helps it stay, you know, I guess lower end, you know, aside from, and that's a change. Like if you have an iPhone 6S, 6S Plus and up, so the 6S, the 7, the 8, then you've had 3D touch. And so for the first time, there'll be a new flagship phone without it, you know, ignoring the iPhone SE because that was the 5 casing. They never had 3D touch in a phone that size, even though it came out later. And that's like debatable. So like how useful it is. If I turned it off, I wonder how often I would like by nature try to use it and then realize, because right now I can't think of using it a whole lot, but I know I do. And so I'd probably have to like experiment with like turning it off and like seeing like how often do I catch myself force pressing my phone to get to something that all of a sudden isn't there. And iOS 12 is adding in lots of changes that let you do 3D touch hidden features without applying force to the display, you know, clearly in preparation for this phone. But that middle phone that has all the cool colors, like, it's an upgrade. And we also assume that it will have the same chip because that's what they did now with the 8, 8 Plus and 10, despite the big range in the cost is that they all have the same speed, with the A11 chip. So we assume these all have the exact same A12 chip. So what I'm thinking about is like, how is that an obvious upgrade? Like if you have an iPhone 8 or 8 Plus, then is the 6.1 inch LCD iPhone, whatever they call it, you know, and all the colors, an obvious upgrade? Like I think the answer is only no if you care a lot about 3D touch and if you care a lot about the dual camera in the back on a Plus model. Otherwise, you know, then it's just like going up to a 10, basically. Like, you know, except you pay around $700 instead of around $1,000.
I mean, it's like 3D touch is the only regression, really. Mm-hmm. Every other department is an improvement.
Yeah, and you could go from an iPhone 10 to an iPhone, you know, the 6.1 inch. Some people call it the 9 now, but I don't know. I mean, you'd have an upgrade in terms of the chip itself, you know. The screen size would be larger if that's something that you value, and then you'd have the color options. So, like maybe some people do go from the 10 to the 6.1 inch iPhone for color, and then you know if you value like the color of the phone over the material, 3D touch, the rear dual camera, and
OLED versus LCD,
yeah. So it that's a real mixed one, but I think from like that's gonna be popular though because of the color options and everything. So that's just I wanted to think about it.
Obviously. The year ago comparison is, you know, generally not what Apple's targeting, right? Like,
sure,
they want this 6.1 inch $700 phone to push all the people on 7s, 6s's, 6s, all those people that want to be attracted by this. And like, it's a massive update. Like, you compare it to the iPhone 8 last year, you're getting, you know, bezels almost as thin as the iPhone 10, Face ID unlocking, you have all the Animoji stuff, group FaceTime things and all those effects can all be on there. Get cool colors, you get a much faster chip. Like, it's a it's a leapfrog change. So this mod is going to be really, really popular.
Yeah, I would say unless you have an 8 Plus, you know, the 10's its own thing, and that was kind of marketed as like next year's iPhone this year. But the unless you have an 8 Plus, then it's really a big leap. And even the 8 Plus, like, I wonder what the screen size comparison is, because 8 Plus is 5.5 inches, this is 6.1 inches. And we're thinking like the 10 Plus, whatever you call that, the 6.5 inches, like the Plus version of the 10's. Where it's like finally you feel like you've got a phone the same resolution that you don't lose space on, even like it's taller and narrower to have a 10, bigger than an 8, but it's not quite the Plus league. Like you still have bigger and more content on a Plus phone than you do a 10. So yeah, I mean, definitely if you have anything older than an 8, but even for an 8, like I can see an up. Like, it feels like this might be one of the bigger year over year upgrades, like back from the 5S to the 6 year. That was a pretty big update.
Yeah, and like when people are going to draw comparisons to the iPhone 5C, right, which is the last time they did this, you know, mm-hmm. bigger array of color options.
Sure, yeah.
And this is kind of like a modern 5C, except it's better. Like,
yeah, you're going to
get
better.
You're going to get this year's chip. You're going to get, you know, this year's, most of this year's modern, like, the 5S and 5C were like, one was fatter and plasticky and one was, you know, aluminium and glass and looked really cool. So whereas this year it's like, you've got the OLED models, but you've got the $700 colorful phone still mostly looks like the premium models. You're missing out on some things for sure, but you know, the $200 price gap is oh, and that's another thing that KGI says in his report, is that he says this 6.5 inch like iPhone 10 Plus will be $999. Mm-hmm. So that assumingly means that the 5.8 inch goes down like $100 to $899.
Yeah,
which kind of then like bridges the gap a bit more, because then you'd have 6.1 inch OCD at $700, then you'd have like $899, $999. So I don't think the top of the line phone this year is going to be more expensive than the top of the phone last year. But you'll get, you know, a 6.5 inch screen rather than a 5.8 inch screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds good to me.
It's hard to argue with it.
Yeah, at this point, so phones unannounced, but specs, you know, we're getting a pretty good sense of what we're going to see this year. Do you keep your iPhone 10 for, like, I know with the 7, you did 7 for 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So do you keep iPhone 10 for 2 years, or did these new phones tempt you in some way? Or
I spent quite a lot of money on the iPhone 10. I'm not. It depends what the problem is, right? I don't want the Plus phones because they're too big, yeah. Right? And it's great. The new Plus is going to actually make sense and not be comical, because, you know, rather than having 40% bezel, it'll be all screen. So it's a great product, but the physical size is still my problem with it, right? I like a smaller phone. It doesn't fit in my pocket as well. It like bumps against my jeans. So the iPhone 10 style, which was, you know, taking the 4.7-inch phone, which is what I used before, carry all the way through, but replace it with, you know, 5.8-inch screen, was like perfect for me. I was like, yes. So I'm not going to... Like, that hasn't changed. Like, the 6.5-inch iPhone 10 Plus has still got the problem of it being, you know, physically too big, even if you're actually getting better bang for your buck in terms of real estate now. It depends what the, you know, whatever the iPhone 11, iPhone 10 Plus 1, you know, whatever that model offers. And it seems like that's going to be a relatively small shift, right? Like,
sure, unless you want gold, then
unless you want gold, which yeah. I wouldn't buy. I think it's cool, but I wouldn't buy it. You know, you're getting a new processor. Like, I don't think there's going to be a generational jump there, which will make me go, you know, I want to flip my, you know, phone that I spent upwards of £1,000 on, because I also bought the 256 gig one, thinking that I was probably going to keep it for at least another generation. So at the moment, I'm trying to stick with it. Mm-hmm. Like, when the phones cross the four digit price points, I kind of want to get more than 1 year out of them. Honestly, it really depends if I can, like, sell it for most of the money back and stuff, and depends on what. I'm not going to downgrade, because I see the 6.1 inches like a downgrade, because I like the screen quality and stuff, and I really like 2x optical zoom for cameras and stuff. So they would have to come out with something really, like, something that hasn't been rumored yet for the 5.8 inch phone.
I feel like it's going to be a tough sell to get a lot of money out of your $1,150 iPhone X with 256 gigabytes when the successor to that same iPhone that looks the same will be $100 less than
exactly
the starting price was. So then you assume like $950 for, you know, a brand new version that's better in some ways. You know, I mean, and there could be like small changes, like the camera is improved in some way, the Face ID sensor is like more responsive in some way. You know, it could be some unique camera trick. There's always like a unique camera trick that's only on certain models. Although this year it sounds like that'll probably be on the 6.5-inch version, like the, you know, with what they do with the camera lenses there. We'll see. But yeah, I imagine it's going to be hard this year to sell your iPhone X for a lot of money when there's a newer or cheaper version out, you know.
And the even cheaper phone, which almost looks like an iPhone X.
yeah, that makes it even tougher sell. So because you've got to be really
fine with it. When I bought the iPhone X last year, I was thinking I'll try and keep it for more than one generation. So
yeah, well, I know a lot of times on these on our podcast, I try and make a declaration about what I'll do and then don't stick to it and then just buy like whatever's new. So let's just consider this private that I have been thinking that I will have so many expenses that maybe it would be responsible and maybe even necessary to just keep my iPhone 10 for another year. And I've had every iPhone since the 4 every year. And my iPhone 10 is on an upgrade program where I pay monthly for it and then trade it in at the end of the year and then like continue paying the same amount of money to AT&T and to get the new one. So there's not a lot of friction in upgrading. It's kind of just like saying like, I mean, I think I had this talk last year too. But it is on my radar that and usually at this point in time, I kind of hate my iPhone and I'm so ready for the next one. But with the iPhone 10, like it's such a leap from what, you know, the iPhones of the past where it was like, oh, we're on like the fourth year of this, like fourth iteration of this design. With the iPhone X, I don't feel that way at all. Like it still feels super modern. And so it is on my radar to calculate the expense this time and not just like instantly upgrade. And maybe I'll find like a justification. But it's in the back of my mind to maybe sit it out for like a year and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the difference for you is you'd considered going to the plus one, so
yeah,
there's actually a jump, if you know what I mean. Like, there's actually a reason to do it.
Yeah, and part of that decision would be, you know, that I'd want like the newer to get that to do. If I'm going to pay the money, I want the newer experience, and like that would feel like a different product than the iPhone X does. But then also, I know I would complain about the screen size, and like, but at the same time, I already kind of do some hand shuffling with the X to reach certain parts of the phone, so. Yeah. So it is in the back of my mind to maybe keep this phone for another year. Like you, I bought the higher storage model, and it would strictly be like just to like game how much money I can save. And at the end of the day, like not buying a new phone is not buying a new phone. So you're going to save money no matter how you do it. But also being on an upgrade program, I think it takes a little bit longer for you to see the benefit of that saving. So. So we'll see about that. Let's talk for a moment about some of the other expenses coming this fall. This is a story also from today, the 5th of July, where a Eurasian database hints at 5 new iPads and 5 new Macs maybe coming this year. Tell me about that.
Yeah, this is the same database that successfully leaked like the iPhone 7, the Apple Watch Series 2, the Series 1, got the AirPods name before Apple announced it. Got the new iPad this year, the 329 one, a few weeks before. So it's been going pretty well. And basically, it's like a database of products that include encryption in the Eurasian region, and Apple has to register there before they can release the products. And in general, it's been like 1 month approximately. There's obviously variants, but like 1 month before they pop up there, and then they come out. So it's like, oh, this is a pretty good sign. Until we had a filing in April, which we covered on this podcast for the 11 iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously now it's July and we definitely haven't seen any iPhones come out, let alone 11. So the trust in this thing being a flawless prediction is definitely going down slightly. But the reality on this one is that new Macs and new iPads are basically to be expected, right?
Yeah, they're separately rumored, and they're due. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's at least three. It seems you can kind of do some criminology on the model numbers because it lists the model numbers, and it seems like there's three MacBook Pros and then two other models, which are probably the Retina 13-inch MacBook Air, that thing. Like, that's probably what these are. And then the iPads are a bit more up in the air, but we already know about the rumors of an iPad Pro with thinner bezels and Face ID. Like, you can just plug the jigsaw together from other sides. The most interesting thing I'd say about this filing is that it says they run iOS 11 and 10.13, not 12 and 10.14. That could indicate they're coming out sooner than the software updates, and we normally expect the software updates in like late September. So that's possible. It could also just mean that they're going to refile and then put 12 on them when, you know, it depends when it's coming out. So yeah. There's some flexibility there, especially for the laptops. Sometimes Apple's done this thing where the Mac update doesn't come out till like a month after, because they normally do like iOS in September along with the new phones. And then the Mac update's more flexible because it's not tied to a specific hardware model necessarily. So I could see them releasing the new laptops on, you know, 10.13, then doing an update to Mojave when it comes out. With the iPads, it's a lot harder to say we're going to ship these with iOS 11, because especially with Face ID, you need all of that infrastructure. You need the Animoji stuff, the Face ID screens, all of that, any support for the new screen size, because we're expecting at least some kind of resolution change or something like that. As the screen's going to get bigger and the bezel's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
So on that one, it's harder to say, oh, it's going to come in a point update for them to release 12 like a month later. But that kind of gives like a general gist. There were some rumors that the iPads were originally scheduled for June and got pushed back. So maybe, you know, when this submission was done, they were going to run iOS 11. And obviously now the plans have changed. That maybe explains that. But basically, you know, iPads and MacBook Pro updates, probably, you know, around the September timeframe.
Yeah, and there's really nothing that like specifically ties the hardware to, even on the iOS side, to a specific version of the software. Like most recently, the iPad Pros were released with iOS 10, and you had to wait until a few months later to have iOS 11 be available out of beta.
Even though like all of their marketing was iOS 11.
Totally, features. Yeah. Like you go into an Apple store and then like you on the website, it was all iOS 11 on the iPads, but like you go and buy one and then you got iOS 10, which in some ways was better. On the Macs especially. So, and the Mac OS release is like, I like that Mac OS is updated with like a handful of new features every year around the same time as iOS. I was listening to some old podcasts recently, and I remembered that Lion was the version that they. Well, I actually no. So Back to the Mac was like the Lion event, but then I don't think there were developer betas anytime near that. It was just like, here is what Mac OS 10.7 Lion will have. But it isn't like today where you get the preview, the unveil, and you get to run it that afternoon. Months went by before you could run it.
Oh, yeah. Lion was announced in October, and it was released to the public in June.
Yeah, and then...
So it was a long gap.
And then the Mountain Lion update was the one where Schiller's quoted as saying, like, we're doing things different now. And that's that included like messages on the Mac, and you could download a trial of messages on the Mac for Lion, but that expired eventually. And then there was like you could only have messages on Mountain Lion, and that began the annual upgrade cycle, right? It's like and then I guess it was the next version that was like, at WWDC we show you for the first time and you can run the beta that afternoon. So it's like, you know, but even still, Mac OS, like even developer betas of like, except for day one, sometimes come a day later. That's true of the public beta, for example, right now. And then in the fall, like iOS can have a release date that's the same as watchOS and tvOS, but the Mac, even if it has features that require to be on the same like iOS counterpart version, like iCloud Drive stuff or notes being on the same version, Apple won't release it on the same day for different, like, for whatever reason. It could be the next month.
And it's like, the iCloud Drive one was when the last time they had a really big gap.
Yeah, and I think
it was like almost a month difference.
Yeah, iCloud Drive was a big deal. Notes was when Notes got the big upgrade, they were on different versions for, you know, a few weeks before the release came out. So it's a lot better than it was, but they're still not in the same like release on the same day every year reliably cycle yet. But they're especially not tied to Mac versions. Like, they can be like a 0.6 version that supports the Macs, you know, the new Macs, for example. So, and it's all, it's mostly just marketing for the iPhone side. It's like, there's a new iOS version and we want it to, you know, that it's in so many ways, like they use the marketing of the new software as part of the new phone, even though you can get on older phones. So
like all the new Animoji and FaceTime stuff, like, that'll be a huge part of the new iPhone launch, will be, you know, group FaceTime running on all the new iPhones, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stuff that you can do on the iPhone 10 will be like the big focus of the new iPhones, of all the new iPhones this year. So yeah, exactly. You know, so the idea of having like new Macs and new iPads, again, the question of like, do you plan to buy anything that's coming? So on iPad right now, I believe your iPad is the 12.9 inch first generation iPad Pro, right?
The OG one, yeah. So
no True Tone, slower USB, I think, right? Like the Lightning
port. Worst camera.
Yeah, big deal. Yeah, worst
big
camera.
Bezels.
Big bezels.
You want a light all on me?
You can land a plane on it, yeah. So I imagine that you're probably like leaning heavily toward wanting a new iPad now.
I'm definitely looking at it, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely considering it. Equally, I don't use my iPad for anything super critical. Like, it's mainly just like what I use it at night time
to
chill out with. So in terms of thinking sensibly, I'm not, you know, it shouldn't be at the forefront of my mind necessarily, but if they change the form factor in a way that's good on the 12.9 inch model, like if they change the 10.5 inch to have small, even thinner bezels and don't change the 12.9 inch, I won't be interested. Like last year,
so this is downgrade for you to have a smaller screen.
Yeah, there's a big screen. I couldn't, all the other iPads seem so small. The 12.9 inch iPad is so nice in terms of real estate. But like last year with the 2017s, they had a really nice update with the ProMotion 120 FPS frame rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that stuff, right? Like, the scrolling, I'm all over it. But they didn't change the bezels on the big one, even though they made the 10-inch and half-inch one have, you know, like slimmer sides.
Yeah.
And that just put me off. Yeah. But I'm assuming this year the thin bezels are coming to both sizes.
Well, and maybe that all the sides have thin bezels, including the forehead and chin parts of the iPad.
Yes, yeah, that's what I mean. It's not like they're only going to roll out the thin bezels on the 10.5 inch one.
Yeah.
They're all going to have no home button. They're all going to put Face ID sensors. They're all going to get a lot sleeker.
Yeah, you like the big iPad. You like the smaller iPhone. I imagine that's like just like, you know, using it in one hand on the iPhone and
pocket more ability. Space on the like iPad. I have like, you know, like jeans. I wear jeans most days, and mm-hmm. you put a bigger phone in the pocket and they're really hard to get out. The 5.8 inch is just a good size for me to have that be the only thing in the pocket, and it like slide in and out well.
Yeah.
And one-handed use, yeah.
Yeah. Would a larger than 12.9 inch iPad appeal to you if it was an option?
Ooh. The 12.9 inch as it is today is pretty big.
Yeah,
if they took the physical size of the current 12.9 inch and just made the screen bigger, because
mm-hmm.
obviously they're getting thinner bezels, so they have something to play with, I would be fine with that. I think for a product overview perspective, the best move they can make is to keep it 12.9 inches and just make the overall thing smaller, because I do think it's a bit of like a tank.
Yeah.
It's like a really, really thin tank.
But and so far they haven't done that. Like they didn't do that with the iPhones. They made the iPhones, the screen size is bigger, and kept like the casing similar. So I agree with you that for iPad, it would be very nice to have just like a smaller casing in the same display size. And maybe it would help out with apps too, because there are some apps that aren't updated for the 12.9 inch iPad yet. They're scaled up 9.7 inch iPad apps. A lot. Facebook's one of them. You know, small startup named Facebook. And then for Mac, I believe that your MacBook is the 2016 MacBook Pro 15-inch?
Correct.
Yeah.
I won't be changing my MacBook for ages.
Okay, you're sticking.
My last MacBook before the 2016 was the 2012, so
4 years there.
I don't have like a 4 year rule, but I'm in no rush on the Mac side to change anything.
Okay. On the iPad side right now, mine is the first generation Pro 9.7 inch. So I do have True Tone, but none of the promotion stuff. Obviously, it's not the largest screen size. Even the 10.5 inch, like, it's such a close display size, but it does make a difference. Like, it feels different. I think the side bezels help with that too. But even just like the web and stuff, like, it's a small change, but it makes a difference. And mine recently, like, I don't crack my iPad. I've gifted iPads like to my dad and my mom, and they've both cracked their iPads and needed to have them serviced, and then like apply like thick cases to them after that. But I've had I think every iPad except for the current generations since the iPad 2, and I've never had an issue with cracking because it mostly just like hangs around my desk and doesn't go anywhere. But this iPad has like multiple hairline cracks that you can't like you cut yourself with it really, but it kind of like stings when you do rub the crevice of it, but it's and you don't even see it when the screen's on unless you look at a certain angle, but it isn't like a single hairline crack. And it started out as one that was like top to bottom, and now it's in multiple places, and it's like, and it just looks like I've been like beating my iPad up. And because it's the first time I've not changed iPads year over year, I feel like, oh, I'm really like using this thing till it's like one of the recycling image, you know, photos that Apple uses. But you know, mainly for that reason, because I'm a very light iPad user, and I wonder if it's because I don't have the newest one, or if it's just because like I'm always going to be a light iPad user. But just the fact that this one is literally like kind of falling apart now in like a way that I think is unfortunate. I'm very interested in the new iPads. The thing is like all of this new stuff out and at once, like I doubt I buy everything when it comes out on day one. Like that's tough, I think. And the iPhones, like you it's like a subscription fee almost, you know, the way that we pay for them now, but
with a big lump centering around September.
right. So with the iPad, I'm very interested in it, but I think that I'll be necessarily not buy it immediately. It'll be one that I think about. Which, you know, for iPad launches, like a lot of times they don't have like a release date; they have like a release month, and then it's like, well, is it in storage yet or not? Like, oh, guess it's there.
They'll be out sometime.
Yeah, 2 weeks. So it shows up like on a Wednesday, and then on the Mac side, I'll admit I probably made a mistake in like selling my 15 inch MacBook Pro that was like the same model as yours, I think, but it had like maybe we had like different specs, but it was a 15 inch MacBook Pro 2016, and I sold that and bought an iMac and a MacBook 12 inch, and then used that for several months, and then sold the iMac, thinking I'll buy a new MacBook Pro and then use the MacBook until the Pros come out. And I'm kind of going back to that same situation I had before. You know, just like I want one machine, one Mac that's portable, but is also like pretty good at a desk. And so I'm kind of eyeballing MacBook Pros if it won't take much, because I'm using this MacBook, 12 inch MacBook, like, to, you know, I'm getting the most.
You're not liking it. I think that's the long end of the stick.
Yeah, I'm hitting bottlenecks a lot with performance, which is like to be expected. Like I honestly considered some of the MacBook Air deals, and it's like $500 for a MacBook Air brand new, one day only sell. I'm thinking like, I know I wouldn't have Retina, but like, would it be faster? Like thinking about it. So
let's wrap it up with this. You know you're having a bad time with your computer if you're considering buying a MacBook Air.
Sure. Yep. Sure. yeah. So, but again, but all of this said, like, we haven't, there aren't any like Apple Watch rumors to discuss this week. But that's the one thing that like I would say Apple Watch, I'm more likely to upgrade than iPhone every year at this point. Like, because the watch, it's so new that every update there's so much room for improvement, whether it's adding the GPS so then you can do outdoor stuff better, adding cellular, so, and then all the speed differences between each model are pretty dramatic. So the Apple Watch Series 4, like, don't know what version of it I would buy yet, but that's like no question that I will acquire a new Apple Watch this year, like I've done every year since it came out. And then everything else is like, you know, debating like, do I need it? iPad. And then, you know, like, is it reasonable to afford and that kind of thing. So all in 1 month is kind of tough though. Well, okay. And there's more evidence of MacBook Pros coming, I believe. I guess there's, what's this Geekbench story that happened?
Yeah, there's a Geekbench, for a MacBook and an iPhone, unreleased, model identifiers. The MacBook highlights probably what the new CPUs are going to be, which is a 28-watt Intel CPU that was announced in April but hasn't actually shipped in a product yet. So for people who was complaining that Apple's late to put chips in it, this new MacBook Pro will probably be one of the first computers on the market to include it, maybe the first. And then the more interesting thing that I want to bring up is on this supposed A12 benchmark. And again, this is on Geekbench. These can be faked. You know, you got to give it some healthy dose of skepticism. But the interesting thing about this A12 benchmark is that the numbers aren't that much better than the A11. Like, it's only about a 10% jump. And for the mobile devices, that's pretty low. Like, Apple loves to tout, like, twice as fast, 50% faster, you know, yeah, double the graphics. And they've done that for, like, the last 4 years on their A-series chips. At least on this benchmark, it would represent somewhat of a slowdown on that graph, like a less monumental leap over what we've seen the last couple of years.
The curve kind of mellows out with the A12 based on this leak specifically. We'll see, but yeah.
I mean, it could be fake. If it's real, then maybe they're going for like a more battery life angle, right? Like if you do the same kind of chip and then just take most of the efficiency gains, you can eke out battery life from it versus, you know, pushing the performance pedals. So there are different angles and different benefits and trade-offs. Oh, and it does suggest the 4 gigabytes of RAM, which is an upgrade from this year, because these phones will have 3. So the next gen would up that to 4, which is always nice to see.
Yeah, that seems to be. They never advertise the RAM spec, but then you see it with like an iFixit teardown. And it's something that you definitely feel like throughout the OS with multiple Safari tabs or apps staying in memory between launching them. And like as you multitask more, you know, the smooth gesture stuff, it's really nice. It's great to see, like to rarely see the app relaunch unless just like, you haven't used it in a long time. So I welcome more RAM. The one thing that's interesting to me about this and iPads is that, you know, because the iPad has like a weird release schedule, it's not the same every year like the iPhone is. A lot of times the iPhone comes out or the iPad comes out with like one chip, and then the iPad will have a newer chip. The iPhone will have a newer chip in a few months. And with the that seemingly would have happened if we had iPads in June and then a new iPhone in September. But because there have been no new iPads, it's possible that it's like one event where we see both iPhone and iPad, and that we'd see an A12 chip in the iPhones, presumably, you know, and then a version of that, like A12X or something in the iPads, which would skip A11 completely for the iPads or any A11 variant in the iPads. So is that what you think would happen? Is that they'd skip the A11 or...
I think it's too late now to roll, because then you'd be like, here's the A11 chip, and then here's an A12 chip. And again, the numbers don't mean anything. It's just marketing. But
sure,
in terms of architectural change, I think they've already skipped over the A11 timeframe, and they'll just have A12X for iPad and A12 for the phones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which maybe is a factor in incremental changes year over year. Although I'm sure that's like mostly driven by like what they need for the iPhone. And I guess they're able to afford like doing all of the same feet. You know, there won't be any crazy new features that need a crazy new chip this year on the iPhones. You know, like it sounds like the screen size and form factor is a lot of the changes this year, and that you don't need to introduce new things like Animoji is pretty intensive. But that you can do that now on the A11 anyway. So yeah, that's interesting to see. So, just further evidence of new things to come. And a very expensive fall. So, let's talk about the Apple Watch for a moment. Raised to Speak Siri. So this was unveiled at WWDC as part of WatchOS 5. We mentioned it here in the podcast a few times as curious, magical if they can pull it off, and unavailable in beta yet. There was a toggle since beta 1. Beta 2 came out. You immediately tried it. I don't think I even thought to. It didn't work. And then somewhere at the end of last week, someone tweeted me to say, hey, it's been here for a couple of days and haven't seen any stories about it. So I tried it. Mine was toggled off for some reason. I turned it back on, and it worked. We've since seen that some of our writers at 9to5 Mac still don't have access to it, and it seems to just be like slowly working over time for people based on reasons we don't understand.
Yeah, it's a weird rollout.
Yeah, but the pitch is you can talk to Siri just by raising your watch to your face and having the display light up. Just say what you want to say, send message to Mayo, I'm running late, and it works without having to say, hey, Siri, or holding the crown down, or typing the Siri complication. And we've finally been able to actually try it out. It's in beta, so like our experiences might vary by what Apple aims to release. But how's it going for you so far?
I've been pretty happy with it. And the key to making it work is the way the label says speak into Apple Watch. Because clearly they want you, it's based on proximity and volume, because you can't have like your hand that far, you can't like talk at a normal, like if you press the crown and speak, you can't talk at that volume necessarily if you're talking quiet, you know, quiet. Like you have to hold the watch close to your mouth and speak normally, or hold it a bit further away and talk louder. And so that kind of answers the confusion I had about it, with that I just like couldn't really wrap my head around how this was implementable in a sane way without like, you know, magic involved. Yeah. So there is a very clear, like, it's not just raising your wrist, it's talking like quote unquote directly into the watch's speaker. But that's fine, like that's an alternative. They're not taking away Hey Siri. It's just an alternative option. You can use the hot word or you can speak directly into it. And with the knowledge of how it works, I've had a pretty positive experience with it. I raise, I speak, it does what I want, and I get on with it. I've never had it go off when I don't want it to. So like if I was talking to somebody else and it suddenly it's found it. I haven't had that problem. I have had it sometimes where I've raised and spoken and I feel like I'm talking directly into it, but it doesn't respond.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's annoying, but that's only happened a couple of times relative to like, I use Siri on the watch at least like 5 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So the positive success rate far outweighs the failures, enough so that this is my new default talking to the watch. If I
want
to turn the lights on, I just speak and do it. I don't say the hot word. I don't bother moving my other arm to press the button in. And I'm really happy with it. If I want to check the weather, I don't have to open the weather app. I just raise my wrist, say the word weather, and it shows the weather from Siri. It's just awfully, awfully nice. And when you describe the feature, it's like, oh, big deal, you don't have to say 2 words anymore. But like, that makes such a difference.
Well, I mean, it's way more natural to tell your assistant, tell Mayo I'm running late, and that's all you have to say, and then it sends you an iMessage that says I'm running late from me to you, and that's all you do.
Yeah, it's like boom, boom, boom. And if you're talking to somebody else and you just want to like check the weather or do something really fast, it's so much nicer just be able to say the actual command versus like standing in front of someone else and be like, hey, you know,
yeah,
hey, watch, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just like, boom, you say one word and you do it. You don't have to stand there and talk out a whole question. You can just say an app name and it will do it. You can say weather, you can do it. You can say, text Zach, I'm running late. And then boom, I'm off and done. Like, it just reduces friction in such a nice way. And yeah, I'm very happy with it as it is in this current beta state.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking to someone who is your assistant and you're having a face-to-face conversation, you're not going to say something like hey to get their attention and then address them by name each step of the conversation. Like with the watch, like the prompt is raise your wrist and have it near your mouth so that it's close enough to hear you and ignore everyone else. And that's kind of like the equivalent of like being face to face with your assistant already. You don't need to then say, hello, assistant. So for me, I also use Siri in the watch quite often, largely for HomeKit commands, some question asking, not as much for like sending messages and stuff like that, but you know, and if it did AirPlay 2, I'd use that like crazy, but it's not there. So, but I've had a mixed experience. So I think it probably, I describe like the failure rate of like, does it hear me or not? Or like, is the gesture that I'm trying to do what it's looking for? And then I you know, like, I know I'm not going to be able to tap the screen and have it work. It needs to be a wrist raise. And I know I can't just like turn my wrist. It needs to be a bring it to my face. So I've got that down. But even with that, I've had testing it and in a real life scenario and then having it not work. And so I'll do it twice and then I'll give up and then I'll use, you know, hey, Siri, you know, before the command to make it work. So I think it needed to be a little bit higher than like 50-50 for me to reliably do it beyond like testing. And then I have had at least three activations that were accidental. One was I was showing my dad Control Center and how to switch your audio source to your AirPods, for example. And that one was reasonable. It was like I was talking, I raised my wrist like to activate this display, flicked up, and like it interrupted me with the Siri screen. And I was just like, ignore that, you know, close that out, and then went back to the Control Center to show him what I was showing him. And it was like, that's reasonable. The next one was I was ordering food at a drive through and I had my arm like on the door with the window down and wasn't even thinking about the watch or Siri. I was just talking to the other person through the intercom, and you know, I have a Series 3 with the voice feedback, and all of a sudden, like, what I had been ordering, Siri had been listening and then said, like, searching the web for, you know, or whatever. It was just, like, what I had said back. And it caught me off guard because I was talking to a person through an intercom, and then all of a sudden there was, like, a voice in between us that I, you know, needed to ignore and then have them hopefully not acknowledge. But the last one was I was putting my son in the car to go to daycare and talking to my wife, and it was the motion of lifting him up into the car seat that triggered, you know, raise to speak Siri. And whatever we were discussing, Siri interpreted as call a person. And luckily I have, you know, the Series 3 with voice feedback. Otherwise, what you know to look for is a tap on the wrist or you being on the phone with someone. But because I heard Siri say calling Susan or whoever it was, then I knew, oh no, bell out. And so, and I put my son down into the car seat and then like dismissed the Siri before it called the person. But that would have been not ideal to call a random person at 6:30 in the morning, you know? And like, at that point, my hands were kind of full for a moment. So it was a situation where too many of those, and all of a sudden I'm not too bothered to just say, hey Siri, before I say the command. So I'm hoping that that's like this is the first beta version. It was in 2 where we can try it and that hopefully it improves. Your experience has been way better than mine, but mine, I've had enough like close calls that it's like and you know, that's like a separate issue from all of this, but I have in my iCloud contacts like lots and lots of PR contacts, and I've had experiences lately with Siri where I'll ask Siri to call someone that's someone I actually talk to on the phone, and it'll misinterpret the name and try to call someone who I would never talk to on the phone, and that's been its own thing. But yeah, I mean, I haven't really had any misfires since then, and that was like in the first couple of days of testing. But hopefully the rules are good enough and that they can, I mean, it's hard. It's like by design, you're not going to know every single time if the person intends it or not. Having voice feedback with Siri helps because then you can bail out if you need to. Cause I think
even with the hot word Siri, you still get misfires occasionally where it just incorrectly hears you as saying.
Yeah. Not as often though.
Goes, bing, 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 bing.
Yeah. Definitely not as often, you know.
It's rare, and clearly this
one's right,
more, because I probably had it hear something as Siri like once in the year, and you know, already testing this. It's happened twice.
So yeah.
Obviously, it's going to be more frequent than that, but it's not like the other way is foolproof either.
Yeah, I'll be curious what when WatchOS 5 is released and someone like buys a watch brand new and sets it up from scratch, what the default is, because you really don't get on the watch the same like setup screens that you do. I mean, there are like it asks you questions and maybe they'll add this as a question, but it seems like having it on by default is tricky. And if you have it off by default, then it's just not going to get as much usage as it needs to.
Also, if it's on by default, I don't think people are going to know how to activate it. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, you need to be sure.
It's just going
to
your watch is just going to do something one time, and you'll be like, "How the heck did that happen?" Like, you kind of need either a screen introducing it, or you know, manually dive into settings.
It's like the gesture when you cup when your watch has an alert that's audible, and you cup the display to turn it off, and you hold it for a few seconds, and then you get a thump on your wrist, and it says,
"Yeah,"
and that's muting it. It's like we didn't know that for the longest time, because we were not really shown that in like any setup screen or anything, and it's like a description within some of the settings, I believe.
And like you knew you can put your hand on top of it to make the screen turn off, but the bit where you keep it held and then suddenly it mutes it is like it's just not. It's just not obvious.
Yeah, and maybe it's already in like in the betas if you set it up from scratch, or it maybe it asks you, but I'm not so sure that it's there. But that's something that you would want an introduction to, you know.
I would guess that it is defaulted to off because it is kind of like a power user feature.
Mm-hmm.
Like you kind of have to do this in a certain way, and like I would at least for like the initial launch, I bet they launch with it disabled by default, and it's like you have to opt into it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just get these occasions where people are just, oh, Siri, Phantom Siri, or Apple's always listening to me, like blah, 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 all that nonsense would crop up, and not unreasonably, because it's hard to describe and hard to justify without actually, you know, getting your head around and grokking, like, what's going on here.
Yeah. And I also wonder, well, I assume that new hardware improves this because it relies on microphone, and if you can improve the microphone in any way, you know, add better microphones, then that helps out. I'm not sure if processor chip, like a better chip, improves the situation or not, but and then also, you know, you improve the speaker and then like the output is better. That's one thing I noticed over the weekend was that I was at a water park and trying to for a moment I thought with walkie talkie a water park, that'd be such a cool thing to do, is like talk to your partner at the water park and, you know, meet here or whatever without a full phone call. And I tried to walkie talkie you and I couldn't quite make out what you were saying over the ambient noise of the great outdoors. So but I did do a phone call like to from the watch to my wife's watch to like meet back, you know, which was kind of the same thing. It was just like at that point we could say, "Huh, what?" without knowing that the message was gone. But I imagine that a new Apple Watch, if they do improve the microphone, that maybe it improves also this experience with the Race to Speak Siri. So I'm glad to see us there though. And if you don't have it, you go to if you're not sure, you go to settings on the watch, general Siri, and then you can turn on Raise to Speak Siri independent from Hey Siri. It's a separate toggle. And if it is on, you just try just by raising your wrist to your face, like you're trying to send like a voice message through your watch, like physically. And or if like you're like on the phone with someone, you kind of raise your wrist to speak to them that way. And just try. And if it works, you know, after a few tries, it's on. If it doesn't work, then for whatever reason, we don't, not everyone has it yet.
Yeah, we haven't worked out the pattern.
yeah. So, also a story worth mentioning this week is that Apple has announced that they're using their vans that we've seen driving around the country for 4 years for this great big effort to rewrite maps. The actual map data within Apple Maps for the first time to use their own maps and not partner supplied maps. So that's pretty big. It just seems that it's going to be a painfully slow rollout, even in the US. And then if you live outside of the US, then especially painful. So you live in the UK.
They're promising some great stuff here with, you know, walking directions to the door rather than to the street. Like, they can locate the shop to the actual place, not just, you know, within the vicinity, constantly updating maps and owning their own map tiles for the first time, not like licensing it for after load of third parties, allows them to be more accurate and also allows them to roll out new features in the future, like potentially Street View or offline maps, because they couldn't do offline maps before because they couldn't get the licenses for it, or like an AR mapping thing eventually down the road. Like, there's a lot of potential behind them owning the actual map data themselves and maintaining it on an ongoing basis, and getting, you know, they say they can get almost near real-time updates when new roads open or there are closures and stuff like that. So it's all great, but it's going to be ages before it like meaningfully impacts people, because it's just slow to roll out. And the place that it is rolling out from the current beta is San Francisco Bay Area, which is probably one of the best mapped areas on Apple Maps already. So the benefits there are going to be small. But when it eventually gets around the world, it would be great. It's just going to be a long time to get there.
Yeah, and for all of 2018, they want to release it in the top half, the northern part of California, so Bay Area and up, I imagine. And then I think they said in the piece,
they said the whole of the U.S. next year.
All of the U.S. by the end of 2019, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and that's that's nice. Yeah, for me, and you've had the vans driving around your country for a while now, so you can imagine.
For a couple years, yeah.
You can
said.
Yeah.
When it will roll out here, and they don't currently patrol the vans anywhere else but the US and the UK. So if you're outside of those two countries, you're going to be really, really waiting a long time, because the vans aren't even scanning it.
Yeah, yeah. So the beta, like they said in the next developer beta, which is iOS 12 developer beta 3, which is out now. It's supposed to have these new maps, and you did some footwork collecting screenshots in an intelligent way of like what the Bay Area looked like before, and it sounds like the side by side wasn't dramatic. Like, what are the differences you're seeing now?
Yeah, mostly for the Bay Area stuff, all you could kind of see was that, I think, because obviously most of the roads and stuff are correct already, so
yeah,
they're not going to change. Obviously, over time, you'd expect to start seeing improvements, because as roads close and move around, their whole point is that it's going to be more responsive and reactive and actually update in time. But the main difference you can see right now is if you go to the Bay Area and zoom in on grassy patches, there's way more fidelity. Like, before, it would just be a green color for the whole area. And now they have like multiple layers of green. They have the pools and the lakes and the water as blue patches. And like, you get more, it's higher fidelity in like the grassy areas, essentially. And I think a lot of that data is coming from them analyzing. They said they've got new high resolution satellite imagery that they're using with like computer vision and machine learning to like identify these things. So you can go to like a park and not just see like a green patch of park, but you can also see like the lines for where the pitches are and stuff. Like, the baseball pitches are actually like marked out like properly now. Like, so that's kind of where right now you can kind of see a difference. And I think when they finish doing it, it'll be more... and also, if you go into 3D, not flyover, but you know, like how you can be on the 2D map and get the kind of building extrusions, like pop out from the ground. That if you actually look at some of the more complicated buildings now, rather than just being a block, they're actually like the shapes of the buildings. They definitely start to do it, but yeah, the bigger impact of when it'll be in less... Because obviously, all the Apple engineers live in the Bay Area, so you'd hope that that's well done already, because everyone, you know, commutes from around there. So the real benefits of this are the near real-time changes, so it doesn't take months for a correction to go in, or if a new road opens, it doesn't take forever, because they're not at the behest of the third parties anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, other parts of the world, including the UK, to be honest, where if you're in London, Apple Maps is pretty good. If you go to the more rural areas... you can still navigate, but like, all the fields are just grey. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's not the actual detail there. So I'm hoping that when it does roll out here, it'll be, you know, a nice change.
Yeah, I like the idea of Apple owning the map, so that if there's a correction, that they can fix it with a very fast turnaround and not rely on the partner. Like, that all makes sense to me, and maybe they can afford to do more things in the future. In terms of like, just is the map like functional or not? I'm curious if it's something that I'd be able to recognize. Like, oh, now this is Apple's new map data. Like, if it's worse, then that will be a problem. And if it's just like more detailed but functionally the same, then you know, it's just like, okay, it's Apple's data now. That's good. Now it can be corrected faster if it's wrong. But I've been in pretty good shape with Apple Maps over the last few years. So I'm curious.
Do you ever get it though when you're navigating to a place and it says you've reached your destination, but you're still not quite there? Do you know, you must have had that experience.
No, my biggest problem, and this is the same for Google Maps as well, is I'm navigating. I'm on a large interstate, and there are multiple like off ramps, and some of them are different layers. Like, this is really problematic in Chicago, where Maps, both Google and Apple, thought I was on the right path, but it was actually the street above me and not the one I was on. And it took forever.
Like the elevation problem.
Yeah, it took forever to like reroute because they couldn't correct, you know, where it thought I was. And it was just really stressful. And it's like, that's the kind of issue I have now. And maybe like if that can be resolved by Apple, and it seems like maybe it could be helped out by this, but that's like the hardware needs to know like what level. And I think by a barometer, you can kind of tell that. And but if that can be fixed, then I'll be grateful, because that's like the worst thing for me is but lane guidance was a big thing, and they added that in on Maps last year, I guess, and speed limits. It's like, that's awesome that they have that in most areas in the U.S. at least, and it seems to be like really accurate. It's like the Street View is like the one thing I can look at Google Maps and say, like, sometimes I just want to know, like, what does the last destination look like? If someone, I've never been there before, like, what does it look like? What do I need to look for when I'm there to recognize I'm there? Not like a obscure street number, but like the building itself. And I'll occasionally look over at Google Maps just for Street View. And there's no indication that Apple's doing Street View in this new version of Maps.
Collecting the images though.
Yeah, they are. But I can see them only ever using that for building out the map itself as like a reference and not releasing like that raw data.
I think whether it's on glasses or whether it's on ARKit map update, they'll do like you hold your phone up and you can see the street. Like what they kind of do with Flyover, where you can move your hand around and kind of see the city, but you're higher up. Like, I think they're going to roll out. They've got all the data. It'd make perfect sense to do it. They'll blur out number plates. They'll blur out people.
Yeah, maybe.
Just hold up your
phone. I'm not so positive.
Like a window of the street.
Yeah, I feel like the high-res photographs that they've collected for themselves, like, it's totally possible in Apple's vision that they only use that to cross-reference their own data, and they never release it as like a product, you know, a feature of the product. And for various reasons, like the effort of having to blur out things and updating.
But they're already blurring it out.
Yeah, but like...
Like they say, before it goes to the human editorial team, they're blurring the faces.
But it also requires like to go back and like keep driving these vans around every like it's a forever project. Otherwise, your data just gets old.
Yeah, but that's what they've committed to, right? Because they're going to update it in near real time. Like,
yeah, but if
they've got to keep going, like this is the whole thing. Like, it's a massive undertaking.
But once you map the world, then you can just like patch it from there. You don't need to like remap the world. And with Street View, you kind of need to like keep remapping it. Otherwise, it's like a time machine. You know,
like, well, I think that's what they're going for, though. I think they're going to keep it up.
Yeah, we'll see. I would love Street View from Apple Maps. I'm not so sure that they'll do it for various reasons, but we'll see. One last thing before we jump off for the week. With iOS 12 beta, iOS 12 in general, one of the big features is shortcuts, Siri shortcuts, and the new workflow replacement app called Shortcuts, where you can kind of build in different things to be like one Siri command that you make to run basically a workflow, not a called shortcut. And the app is going to be in the App Store, so it wasn't part of the iOS 12 betas. Well, as of today, you can request, and some people are already receiving early access to that through TestFlight. So if you're a registered developer, you can go to the Developer Center and request a Shortcuts app beta 1, and Apple may or may not add you to their TestFlight. So that's neat.
Yeah, I'm happy to give it a go. And like, I want to kind of try and make like a daily briefing, kind of like Amazon Echo, but you know, hack together with a Shortcuts app, because I think it should be possible. So that'd be cool to try and, you know, figure it out, like patch over some of the HomePod's weak spots.
Yeah, I've been on one test flight from Apple for Classroom, the Classroom for iOS app. For Classroom for Mac, you just download it because you can just download apps. But on iOS, for beta deployment, they use TestFlight, like even for their own apps that are going to be in the App Store. So same thing for Shortcuts. I requested access, haven't received it yet, but I'm hoping to be able to poke around with it. So maybe next week we'll have some experience we can discuss there. So with that being said, that's the Happy Hour podcast for this week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are
BZA Mayo.
And also follow 95 Mac. You can email us at happyhour@95mac.com. And we'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.